Core Packaging versus Innovative Packaging Corporation, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is William Snyder. I represent Innovative Packaging Corporation, which was the defendant in the District Court and is the appellant and cross-appellee here. The plaintiff in the District Court was MoreCorp, which is a subchapter S corporation owned by an individual, Martin Field. This case presents a situation where an agent who owed his principal fiduciary duties of loyalty and full disclosure without telling his principal, placed himself in a position of conflict of interest, and when the principal learned about that, terminated the agency relationship. The principal issue presented
well,
by
the... shouldn't he have given him an opportunity for cure? That seems to be the weakest part of your case. 30 days.
The matter of cure was the basis of the district court's determination that the termination was improper. The answer to that is twofold. First, the contract did not require notice to cure in a situation where the sales representative placed himself in a position of interest. And second,
where does it say that?
Well, the only provision that the contract contained that would require notice to cure limited the requirement to a situation where the sales representative was not performing his duties.
Well, what's the language? Where is the...
It's in section 2.2.1 of the agreement, which is, unfortunately, I didn't bring it up to the podium with me. It's in the separately bound appendix. If I go back to the table, I could grab it in about 10 seconds.
Sure, of course you may.
It's in the appellant separately bound appendix at appendix page 104.
Mm-hmm.
That provision provides that the agreement may be terminated by a party if the other party fails to perform any of his obligations and the failure is not remedied within 30 days after receipt of written notice describing the failure. That provision, failure to perform his obligations, is such things as And there were some respects in which the sales representative didn't, which aren't really material to my argument.
What provision is this?
I'm sorry?
104, where on 104?
It's at the very top. Appendix 104, it's the very top line.
Right.
Section 2.2.1. That is one of the provisions relating to termination, and it says the agreement may be terminated by a party if the other party fails to perform any of its obligations and such failure is not remedied within 30 days of the receipt of notice describing the failure. So, my point
is... there are a bunch of other things listed here, force majeure and incapacity and conviction of an economic offense and having your, you know, going broke and so on. So don't you have to argue that somehow this breach of fiduciary obligation, is encompassed by these other termination provisions, or?
No, Your Honor. These other provisions do not say that these are the only grounds upon which the contract may be terminated. A principal has an inherent right to terminate an agency relationship.
Now,
in
when
the
you
event
say
of
that,
conflict.
Is that based on cases or what?
Oh yes, Your Honor. The agreement provides that it's governed by Wisconsin law, so the cases that we cited in our brief are Wisconsin cases, some decided by the Wisconsin state courts and some decided by the federal district court in Wisconsin. But the law there, as it is in most jurisdictions, I think, is clear that an agent has very strict duties of fiduciary duties of disclosure and loyalty to a principal. And a failure to comply with those duties is an inherent right of a principal to terminate an agency relationship. So My point with respect to the notice requirement in the contract is really two things. First, the language of the contract providing for notice only applies to situations where the sales representative was not doing his job, not calling on customers, not quoting correct prices, that kind of thing. But it does not say, and it could not reasonably be construed to mean, that the company, the principal, is required to give notice to cure to an agent who breaches his fiduciary duties. Once fiduciary duties are breached, the whole basis for an agency relationship is destroyed. It's founded on trust and loyalty, and to repeat a phrase that we used in our brief, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And in a situation, an agency principal situation, it really wouldn't make sense to have a provision that the principal has to give the agent notice to cure. But the second point I wanted to make in that connection is that in this particular circumstance, providing 30 days notice to cure would put the principal in a completely untenable position. What we had here was a sales representative who was in the process of acquiring a company that competed with his very own customers. My client didn't find out about that until after a deal in principle had already been reached, and after the sales representative, Mr. Field, had tried to recruit an employee away from one of his own customers. And the customer called my client and protested, raised heck about it, and understandably so. At this point, and of course, word gets around, so other customers are going to know about it too. And customers are not going to want to deal with a sales representative who learns about their business, learns about their pricing, learns who their customers are, does all of the things you'd expect a sales representative to do in relating to his customers and interfacing with the manufacturer. You can't expect him to be an effective sales representative if his customers know that a month from now he's going to be their competitor. And that's exactly the situation that IPC was confronted with. So to contact Mr. Field and say, well, you're in breach of your fiduciary duties, but we're going to wait 30 days to terminate your relationship, during which time you remain as our sales representative, is completely untenable.
But don't we really have a drafting problem here? Because Section 2.2 doesn't provide any exception for breaches of fiduciary duty. And the case that you cite in support of your position, I mean, you really don't cite any Wisconsin cases that are analogous to the situation here.
Well,
why don't you tell me your best case? Because I think you cite that Hudson case, but it's very different than the situation here.
Well, I don't think the Hudson case is all that different, because this language we think should not be construed to mean that the phrase failure to perform his obligations should be included to mean failure to maintain his duty of loyalty and disclosure to the principal. Literally, we don't think it says that. We believe that failure to perform his obligations means to do the things that a sales representative is supposed to do. To read that language to mean that if a sales representative, an agent, places himself in a position of conflict of interest, that the principal has to let that conflict of interest continue in existence for 30 days, just doesn't make sense. It's not a possible situation.
Well, don't you have a problem, too, with the renewal provision? Because it says the agreement shall continue for 3 years from the startup and be automatically renewed unless earlier terminated by either party in accordance with the provisions of 2.2, 2.3, and 2.4. So that defines the types of termination. And again, there's no exception.
The contract provides that it will be renewed unless it is properly terminated. That is correct. The thrust of the question, as I understand it, is does it in effect mean that if the contract could otherwise be terminated by reason of the agent's creation of a conflict of interest, that the agreement would have to be renewed notwithstanding that, We believe that would not be a reasonable construction of the contract. We believe the law that establishes a very, very strict standard of fiduciary responsibility between an agent and a principal has to be read into the interpretation of a contract. There's general law that contracts are interpreted in light of existing legal principles. And the basic foundation for the plaintiff's position on this, and which underlied the district court's opinion, was that once IPC discovered that their sales representative was in a conflict situation, they had to leave him in place. They had to let him continue to act as their sales representative, incurring the wrath of their customers as it built up. And that, in our view, is not consistent with the very strict and strong legal principles governing the fiduciary duty of loyalty and full disclosure that an agent has to a principal. And the contract ought to be interpreted in light of that principle. And that's the principle, as I said, that's really the principal issue that the case confronts. We have made other points in our brief, and I won't take the time to argue them unless the court
pushes higher. Yeah, what do you want to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yeah, I do. So,
okay, thank you, Mr. Schneider.
Thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court, my name is Harvey Barnett. I represent the Eppley. The provision in question, or the claim in question, breach, falls directly within that paragraph 2.2.1.
Well, I mean, that's not clear. There's obviously a gap here.
Well,
some things are curable, some aren't, but who knows whether this falls under the category of failure to perform obligations.
Well, as if I may point out to the court, paragraph 3 of the contract set forth the duties of the agent. And it said the agent agrees to act in the best interest of the company. Their termination letter on what I call this jet age afterthought defense, which is our appendix 1, their letter of August 10, 1999, states, in addition to agent's failure to perform its obligations as described in company's letter to agent dated July 1, 1999, agent has failed to act in the best interest of the company by attempting to purchase this company. The purchase hadn't even gone through yet, Your Honor.
Well, that doesn't matter.
But
does it?
Well, I believe it does.
Why?
Because he could have abandoned it. Had they put him on notice.
But he was already trying. He was already trying to hire people away.
No.
Hire people.
No. There was one incident with a Mr. Kite who had approached Mr. Field, and he was with a different company who said that he'd like to go to work for Mr. Field if Mr. Field ever bought a company. Mr. Field had a discussion with him. Mr. Kite never pursued it. That was the end of it. So the fact of the matter is that this falls within the best, that by their own.
You may have a good argument on the basis of the contract. I found your efforts and Judge Anderson's to minimize the gravity of the conflict of interest to be extremely unpersuasive.
Well, Your Honor, Judge Anderson also found not only...
Also found Judge Anderson's findings utterly perfunctory. I don't think... He has long meandering transcript discussion going nowhere and not really supporting your position. And then these very perfunctory findings, written findings at the beginning, which don't address the issues.
I believe...
Very satisfactory.
Well, Your Honor, the Judge Anderson found factually, not only legally did they violate the contract by not giving an opportunity to cure, but he also found factually that this did not constitute a breach. And there was...
That I find unbelievable.
Well, Your Honor, there was substantial evidence, and he's a trier of fact, that this was not a conflict situation. And the reason being...
I don't see how you can even argue that.
Well, there was evidence in the case, Your Honor, that in this industry...
No, but that was completely different. I mean, it's one thing to buy your corrugated sheeting from Stone. It's another thing, these all little fly-by-nights that are listed here. It's a completely different sector of the industry. But there's obviously going to be huge suspicion of Field once he's a competitor.
Well, first, Your Honor, Mr. Field testified that at a certain point in time, he was not even buying this for himself.
Well, that's another little unbelievable bit here.
But the judge,
how naive are we supposed to be?
But the trier of fact believed it, Your Honor. It's truth.
I can't tell what he believed from this, what I described as this meandering stream of consciousness transcript here. I was just looking at something which was very adverse to you.
Judge Anderson, Your Honor, stated that he did not see a conflict. He did not see this as being a breach. And on top of it, Your Honor, we have the preliminary plan doctrine, which would allow someone to go out and make at least preliminary plans.
Yeah, but
to
purchase plans. And planning is something you do internally. When you start talking to people in the industry so they get wind of what's afoot.
But JetAge at that point in time was not even a client anymore of Morcor or IPC. And at the time Mr. Field did that, he was planning to put his children in the business. On August 10th, when they gave him the notice and gave him no opportunity to cure, there was no contract. Had they given an opportunity to cure, he could have abandoned it. He could have convinced IPC that this was not going to be a conflict.
Well, that's,
but
of course,
none of
that's
that
another thing missing here. I mean, there's no discussion of causation here. This failure to give an opportunity to cure would be completely harmless if the evidence showed that Field would not have abandoned his plan to buy the box company, right?
Sure, but Mr. Field testified that had he been given an opportunity to cure, I would have had these various options. I would have sat down.
No, but what would he have done? What options would he have had?
But that's all speculation, Your Honor.
No, that's causation. You have to prove a causal relationship between the breach of the cure provision and the loss and the loss of the agency, right?
I have to show that they breached their contract.
No, prove a causal relation between a breach and your damages. You can't get damages without causation.
But
if he would have gone ahead with the box company and gotten cured and gotten terminated after 30 days, he would have had the same losses he's suing for, right?
Correct.
So how is he harmed by the 30-day, by the failure to...
He was harmed because... No, it's a different business. He was harmed because he was deprived of the commissions that they terminated him without giving him an opportunity to cure. It turned out Mr. Field went eventually in the box business only 1% of Midwest Corrugated, not 100%. And as a matter of law, in my view, that's not mitigation, but it's a completely different business. The manufacturing business in which there was a substantial investment made.
The point is,
but he was deprived of the commission. That's the causation.
I understand he lost some commission. My point is, suppose we knew for a fact, suppose we were ready to concede, and there's no finding by Judge Anderson, but suppose it were established, suppose Judge Anderson found that Field was determined to buy the box company, and therefore he would have been terminated after 30 days. If so, what harm did it do to terminate him 30 days earlier? Now, maybe it did some harm.
It would
be 30 days harm, right?
No, it's all speculative, Your Honor.
What do you mean speculative? You have the burden of proving a causal relationship between the breach of contract and the losses for which you're suing.
Yes, I know that. And
you understand that.
Now, I know that.
If he had, if we knew, or that he was going to go into the box business, then the only effect was that he was terminated of the breach was that he was terminated 30 days earlier.
No, Your Honor. He could have gone. This contract.
Sure,
this contract did not prohibit.
You're not taking my. Oh, you think he couldn't be terminated for going into the box?
Oh, absolutely. This contract, in fact, Mr. Lingle admitted that this contract did not prohibit him from going into other businesses. Now,
this other business, it did.
No, it did not. That was a question of fact.
Well,
that would have been a question.
That there is a duty of loyalty here that could be violated, right?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
There could be. Could be. And the basically they're propounding speculation on speculation. If he would have gone into the box business, maybe, and there's no proof of this, some of the customers, other than this one man who complained because that was the fellow with the employer, maybe some of the customers would be upset, and maybe they then wouldn't place their orders with Innovative Packaging if he in fact went into the box business. That's what their contention is before this court and before Judge Anderson. It's all speculation.
Well, of course, they'd be upset because they would be buying stuff from someone who was competing with them and who could, you know, wouldn't be expected to give them the best deal since he doesn't want their cost to be lower than his cost.
We put on two witnesses who said the opposite, Judge. Mr. Heyman and another gentleman, Mr. Wood.
Well, if Judge Anderson had discussed that evidence, I would be more comfortable. But I don't see the discussion. I see this. What's all this stuff about en bancs and it's just so, I don't know, what is going on here?
I can't explain the reason why Judge Anderson, what he said in his various statements in open court. He asked us to prepare a concise finding of fact, conclusions of law, and we did. May I address my...
So he signed your findings, is that it?
Joint findings. Mr. Snyder and I prepared them. We reviewed them in open court with the court.
We don't encourage that sort of thing. I mean, judges are supposed to make their own findings.
We were following the court's instructions, Your Honor. May I address my issue about the request to admit fact?
Sure.
In my view, Your Honor, this is a trial that shouldn't have been, at least on liability. The defendant sent a notice of termination to my client July 1st. It listed five specific grounds. As the court knows from our briefs, they abandoned those grounds on the last day of trial, having put us through the trial and having taken the position in the request to admit that those still constituted material breaches of contract and that my client had not cured them. And then on the last day of trial, obviously realizing that that wasn't going to hold water, Mr. Lingle recanted that testimony and said, oh no, the July 1st letter was only a wake-up call. But if you look at that August 10th termination letter, our Appendix 1, the court will see that they cited those very grounds, and only those very grounds, as the initial reason to terminate the contract, and then made this reference to the attempt to purchase this other company as an afterthought. So those were the grounds on which they terminated the contract. And that, had they admitted that request, Your Honor, as they were required to do under the law, we would have summary judgment, because I view this jet age issue, as frankly Judge Anderson did, as a question of law, because they did not give us an opportunity to cure. That's a question of law, and there would have been no trial on liability. Judge Anderson came close to finding in our favor on that issue, but said that we didn't phrase the question exactly correctly, that we should have said specifically that one or more of those things was not a material breach, or you didn't list it as a material breach. But as I point out in my brief, that would have been redundant. They had already listed them as material breaches. They had already sued on them. And the question we asked was that you did not consider these to be material breaches, and you considered that my client, Mr. Morcor, had cured these, in our view, was the proper question. And had they admitted that, as I say, Your Honor, there would have been absolutely no trial and liability. We would have proceeded to damages.
I'm looking at page 40 of the appendix, which is part of Judge Anderson's musings, and he said he talked about how the relationship had begun to deteriorate. The plaintiff had already begun to hedge his bets by initiating discussions to acquire a company, which was going to take a substantial amount of effort on his part, even if it wouldn't have eaten up all of his efforts. We'll never know if it would have undermined his salesmanship so much that he wouldn't have sold anything. But your son and son-in-law probably would have required enough oversight at the beginning so that your sales wouldn't have been at the level that IPC demanded it. Once again, that is a we will never know. Because maybe if things had worked out when the deal fell through the first time, Mr. Field, you wouldn't have followed through on it. This seems to me very much at the heart of the case, and one interpretation of what Judge Anderson is saying is that you would have sold something, but your sales wouldn't have been at the level that IPC demanded it, and that, of course, would justify termination. If it would justify termination in 30 days, you don't actually have any losses from the breach of the contract. And there may be a reconciliation here with the findings that you drafted, but it seems to me a very unsatisfactory discussion by the district court.
May I respond to that, even though my time's up? I think what Judge Anderson is saying is just exactly what I've said, Your Honor, and that is we will never know how.
You would not have reached the level of sales that IPC demanded.
Had it gone ahead. That's perhaps he's saying that's what would have happened had this, in fact, gone ahead.
You have the burden of proving that it wouldn't have gone ahead if you had 30 days, that Field would have reconsidered and would not have bought the box company.
That's what Mr. Field so testified to. And Judge Anderson believed him and found in our favor. It was a prior effect.
There's no finding that he would not have gone through if he'd had the 30 days to think about it.
Well,
no finding to that effect.
The finding was that in any event, Judge, it was terse. He said, in any event, the court believes that this did not constitute a breach of the agreement, in any event, in addition to the fact that they never gave us an opportunity to cure. That's what the finding was. Paragraph 2 of the findings of fact, conclusions of law, of the conclusions of law.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Snyder, how much time does he have?
Thank you, Your Honors. I would like to just address two or three points that came up during Mr. Barnett's remarks. First, the suggestion that in recruiting an employee from one of his customers, this was all a very tentative situation is not accurate and is not consistent with the record. As we indicated in our brief, Mr. Field wrote a letter to the customer's employee specifically offering him a job. It's Defendant's Exhibit 94, and it's discussed at pages 470 to 72 and 747-48 of the transcript. And the letter, which was dated July 22, 1999, said he offered employment to the company, quote, which my family and I are purchasing. As the plant manager, you will report to me. We will be taking over the ownership of the company on September 7. So there was nothing tentative about it. And clearly, Mr. Field himself was going to be running the company. Second, the comment that he only owned 1% of the LLC that was acquiring the company. That's true. The ownership was in his children. But Mr. Field was the manager of the company for life and had absolute control over it. So clearly he was going to be the competitor of IPC's customers. Next, I think it's important to emphasize that in a principal-agency relationship, a breach of trust can be inherently incurable because the relationship is based on trust. And here the situation posed by the concept of an opportunity to cure is simply the question of whether IPC was required to wait 30 days while the situation festered, while its sales representative in Illinois, supposedly dealing with its customers, was in a position where they knew that in a few weeks he was going to be their competitor and naturally would not want to have anything to do with him. That is an untenable situation, and the contract cannot reasonably be interpreted to have required it. Finally, with respect to the cross-claim, my client never recanted or contradicted itself in any respect. It wrote to Mr. Field on July 1st, itemizing various respects in which it felt that his performance was deficient, but it didn't mention the JetAge acquisition for the simple reason that they didn't know about it. When they decided to terminate the contract, it was not for the reasons that they had sent the July 1 letter, which were perfectly valid reasons in their view, which they believed were perfectly valid throughout the trial of this case, but were not the reasons they decided to terminate the relationship. The reason they decided to terminate the relationship was because a conflict situation had been created which they simply couldn't allow to continue. And that position represented no inconsistency, no contradiction, no recantation of anything, and as the district court properly found, therefore there was nothing in the answers to the requests for admission which were made in bad faith. So, we respectfully request that the Court of Appeals reverse the finding of the district court of liability for improper termination of the agreement, and we request that the Court of Appeals affirm the district court's denial of the cross-appellant's petition for attorney's fees that was made after the case. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case is